Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Joey Schultz and I'm joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts. First up, he likes to get those low drops. It's Matt Morgan.
Joey, do you know what the opposite of ladyfingers is?
That's the bread, like sweet bread or something?
Yes, it is.
The dessert? No, I don't know. What is that?
Happens to be Mentos.
Mentos.
I got you good. I'm happy about that result.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm really charmed by that. I really like that one, Matt. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Up next, he just likes to get low. That's Dana Roach.
People seem to think we're finishing up the last month of the year of Commander, but I'm fairly certain we're finishing up the first year of the decade of Commander based on everything I'm seeing. So I'm excited for that.
I think I might agree with you. Well spotted. Anyway, this is the EDH Retcast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the Commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And here on the podcast, what we'd like to do is give all that data a little more context. Hey, Dana, what is it that we're talking about this week?
We're talking about the lowest mana curves in EDH, the opposite of what we did last week.
That we are. Last week, we took a look at the commanders that have the highest average mana costs in their deck, the biggest mana curves. And this week, we're flipping that script a little bit and taking a look at the commanders that have the lowest instead. So it should be really cool to see what we can find out about the commanders that play the smallest mana curves possible. But before we get to our main topic for this episode, what we want to do is pause and give a huge thank you to Josh LeQuiet and all the folks at the Command Zone podcast who handle all of the post-production work on our podcast here, making it look as awesome as it does. So thank you so much. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors for our show as well.
Yeah, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Card Kingdom and TCG Player. Card Kingdom has a ridiculously good buy list if you have unused cards you want to part with to pick up cool stuff from Commander Legends. So anything you want, they would have in stock. TCG Player is also a sponsor of ours, and they have the most possible sellers out there. So anything you want, somebody will have. Just go to EDH Rec and click on the card in question, then follow the link to the site of your choice. Click on it, and you will support both the site and the show.
And if you're one of those people that's weird and you don't like buying their cards, you don't have to buy cards from Card Kingdom or TCG Player, though we do highly recommend it. But if you would prefer to support us directly, you can do so at patreon.com/EDHRetcast. We appreciate all of our patrons over there. And if you want to join the Discord, if you want some swag every now and then, or you just want to watch this episode a day early, get to see our shining, smiling faces, you can do that over at patreon.com/EDHRetcast. We even have a tier where we thank a certain patron every week. So this week we are going to say thank you to Daniel Medina. We appreciate all of your support. It is so awesome to have you on board.
Yes, thank you so much for the support. All right, fellas, let's get to our topic now. We are going to dive in, but just in a second, because first we want to lay some groundwork, just like we did for the last episode. So, you know, real quick, as always, we want to, you know, address that we are only going to discuss commanders that have over 100 decks on EDH Rec, because if it's below that point, it's just not as useful of data. We want to set a threshold somewhere so that we can talk about commanders that are seeing enough play. And then also a note that this data was all drawn on mid-November 2020, and we use the average deck feature on EDH Rec and average out the mana cost that we find among those average decks to get all of this information. And a reminder also, just to sort of help, you know, establish what is an average converted mana cost so that we compare that to the data that we're going to see on this episode. Reminder that at the end of the last episode, we saw that the CMC of decks on average across all the decks that we're measuring data for, across all of them overall, is trending at about 3.33, tends to be the average mana cost that we're seeing for a typical EDH deck. Though in the last episode, Matt, with all of the encouragement of you and your really big phenomenal face-bashing monsters, we saw that the Commander Jota got the highest point of a mana cost of 5.55, an average CMC of 5.55. Like, that thing was really crazy, and I feel like you had something to do with all of those really high mana cost creatures that Jota's cheating out.
One can only hope. One can only hope.
Well, we'll see if Dana has something to do with all of the low drops that we might be seeing in this episode, because that boy does like to slim down on those mana costs.
He does love his Night's Whisper. I will give him that.
He really does. All right, so let's get to it. Dana, do you mind starting us off with our number 10? We're taking a look at those low CMC commanders with the lowest curves. Who starts us off with our number 10 on this list?
Number 10 is Kess, Dissident Mage. So that's a Grixis commander, 1 and Grixis, 4 mana total for a human wizard. Kess has flying and says, during each of your turns, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. If a card cast this way will be put into your graveyard, exile it instead. So there's 3,300 Kess decks we have in the database, and the average CMC is 2.21. And of that average CMC, we're looking at 47 cards with CMC 2 or less showing up in Kess decks. So there's a lot of super low CMC cards in there. Things like Ponder or Preordain, Gitaxian Probe, Brainstorm, a lot of rituals to give you mana to cast more of those cards. So it's just really, really efficient stuff.
Average CMC of 2.21. We saw that the average was 3.33. I know that that maybe doesn't sound like a whole lot just off those small numbers, but when the cap was 5.55, we're already starting off way, way low here.
Really, really low, yeah. At that point, you're looking at decks that are primarily running one drops for the most part. I mean, to get to that point, you have to be running a lot of one drops to offset the threes, and in this case, 4 for the commander alone.
Yeah.
So really, really lean.
When you look at the average deck too, there's 39 instants and sorceries too. So like they're really going heavy into a lot of just very, very cheap card draw that we're seeing. Although, like you said, cantrips, maybe not a whole lot of interaction. Who knows?
Well, and we talked about, you know, at the end of last week's show, cards that like aren't necessarily the CMC they say they are. That isn't the case here. These aren't really X spells. These are very much cards that cost 1 or none in the case of Gitaxian Probe when you're casting it for life. So these are legitimately super cheap cards.
Yeah, very, very much. I'm especially caught up with the fact that there are 47 cards with mana cost of 2 or less. That's over half the cards in the deck. That is very, very trim indeed. But it's only going to get even more slim from there. Matt, do you mind taking us to number 9 and seeing who's up next?
So number 9 is a recent one that I've pondered around with, but decided against it. Joyra Weatherlight Captain. That is the, is it Joyra? Well, they're both is it, but this is the one from Dominaria that came out. It's 2 and is it colors, so a blue and a red for a 3/3 human artificer. Whenever you cast a historic spell, you draw a card. And just as a reminder, historic spells are artifacts, legendaries, and sagas. So whenever you cast an artifact, you draw a card. Whenever you cast a legendary spell, you draw a card. And whenever you cast a saga, you draw a card. There's 2,160 decks on the website right now. Average converted mana cost is 2.17 with a whopping 42 cards that have a CMC of 2 or less. We're seeing a whole bunch of cards out there like Mox Amber. You have Spellbook and Ornithopter because that's a EDH powerhouse apparently. But there's all sorts of just spells that you just kind of, the average deck kind of looks like a combo deck almost, where you're casting a lot of just zero mana artifacts, churning through your deck, drawing a whole bunch of cards, and usually finding some sort of a combo finish from there. So pretty lean, pretty mean. What do you guys think about Joyra here?
I think it's so mean that she doesn't even care what artifacts she's casting. She just wants to draw cards with them. So if they're zero drops, even if they had a negative impact, she doesn't care because it's just, I draw a bunch of cards this way because it just casts the whole deck for free and lap man my way to victory.
And I guess it doesn't really matter at all in terms of gameplay, but I do think it's kind of fascinating that we have 2 Joyra cards. One is in the top 10 for highest CMC and one is in the top 10 for lowest. That's pretty neat.
She took a full 180 on that one. Yes. Absolutely true. Also, speaking of historic stuff, that is also going to show up for our number 8. If we hop right to that, our number 8 commander on this list is Teshar, Ancestor's Apostle. Which I think still kind of gets maybe a little bit overlooked. It is from Dominaria, a 4-mana 2/2 flying bird cleric that says whenever you cast a historic spell, you return target creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. And again, a reminder that artifacts, legendaries, and sagas are historic. So Teshar is a really interesting case that because of the sheer density of, you know, legendary creatures that appeared in Dominaria maybe got overlooked a little bit, but it is getting a bit more love nowadays because there are 713 Teshar decks on Idiotrek. The average mana cost is just 0.01 beneath the previous commander Joyra. We're saying an average CMC here is 2.16 for Teshar, which fits very, very neatly within Teshar's limitation of the 3-cost or less. Matt, how many cards are we seeing that have a mana cost of 2 or less on Teshar's page?
So we're seeing 37 cards, which is a pretty significant number. I mean, you're pushing 40% of the deck is finding is sliding in under that 2 CMC or less. But when you have a specific number on the commander listed like you do with Teshar, that naturally is going to lean out the deck. Even if you're not playing it the most, you know, lean and efficient version of that deck, you want to maximize your targets regardless. So even if the average CMC was closer to 3, you still would have a fairly efficient deck because that number, that kind of places a cap on what you want to be casting because Teshar has that CMC of 3 or less.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of interesting cards here that you really are not going to see in any other commander deck. There's stuff like Salvage Scout or Leonin Squire, stuff that lets you loop creatures and artifacts back and forth from graveyard to hand to battlefield and back and forth and back and forth from all those zones. And then if you can do stuff like loop a Sky Scanner, which draws a card when it enters, you'll draw a bunch of cards, or a Cathodian, which gives you mana when it dies. Well, if you've got your, you know, cool combo loops here, you can have Cathodian die over and over and over again to get you 3 mana each time it loops. Or there's like I'm seeing a Perilous Mirror showing up here too, which dies and deals damage. So Teshar can cause these loops to deal damage, to gain mana, to draw a bunch of cards, even in mono white. Yes, it is possible. We're seeing a whole bunch of combo stuff emerge as these decks are sort of streamlining themselves, and Teshar is no exception.
I mean, our next card on the list here isn't an exception either. At number 7, we're looking at Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy.
Oh, yeah.
Kinnan is a 2-mana Simic, so 1 green, 1 blue for a 2/2 human druid. And the important text here is whenever you tap a non-land permanent for mana, it adds 1 mana of any type that permanent produced. And you can also spend 7, so 5 in Simic, and look at the top 5 cards of your library and put a non-human creature card from among them out of the battlefield, and the rest go in the bottom of your library in a random order. But that first little bit is what's important because the deck runs a ton of 1-drop mana dorks. If it costs 1 mana and you can tap it for mana after it's in play, it's in the Kinnan deck.
Yeah. So many of them on the mana dorks.
Yeah, an average CMC of 2.16, so we're getting close to breaking that one barrier. 47 cards with CMC 2 or less.
But wait, Dana, didn't we just say that Teshar had fewer than that? Teshar had 37 cards with CMC 2 or less. Like, why are these numbers so crazy? Why aren't they all, you know, sort of uniformly streamlining as we go up the page? Well, it is going to be actually a little bit wonkier in this particular episode rather than the, you know, the slimming or the growing as we saw in the last episode. These particular numbers are a little bit stranger because it's averaging out more than just the lowest cards when we're looking at it here. Teshar didn't have as many 1 and 2 drops as Kinnan does, but Kinnan actually does have a higher number of expensive payoffs at the top end.
Yeah, you need to use that mana for something.
Right.
So there's cards like Crater Hoof Behemoth in here, which is an 8 drop, or things like Nyx Moon Ancient just to get that much more mana out of those mana dorks that you're tapping for twice as much anyway. So the payoffs in this deck tend to be much higher CMC than what we were looking at in the Teshar deck.
Yeah, and I'm just as afraid of Kinnan as I think I always will be. Even if it didn't have those top ends, I'm still very afraid of all of the combo stuff that these things can do. Matt, do you mind taking us to number 6?
So number 6 is another one, kind of like what Dana was hinting towards, where you want so many different things that are just going to tap for 1 mana on turn 2. Shu Yun, Silent Tempest, wants as many spells that cost 1 mana so that you can activate his ability right after. So Shu Yun, Silent Tempest is 2 and a blue for a 3/2 human monk, has prowess, and then whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may pay hybrid Boros, so that is a red and a white hybrid mana. If you do, target creature gains double strike until end of turn. So Shu Yun has 722 decks out there to his name, got an average CMC of 2.15 with 45 cards have a CMC of 2 or less. But all those cards, it's going to be stuff like Slip Through Space that's going to make sure Shu Yun can't be blocked, trigger the triggered ability where you can pay the Boros mana to give him double strike, and you're just going to go to town and wail on some people. Titan Strength, Distortion Strike, all those cheap combat tricks that are going to enable you to give Shu Yun double strike, maybe cantrip and draw you a card, but really you're just trying to pump him and just bash face as hard and as fast as possible.
Yeah, to get as many of those prowess triggers, you really want things to be... You can't afford to play a 3-mana spell all of the time with Xu Yun. You need to be able to play 3 1-mana spells to get him the power buff that he really requires. Mm-hmm. This reminds me a whole lot of I Have a Feather the Redeemed deck, and it's kind of the same story there. You have a whole lot of one-drop spells that you can cantrip onto Feather or that you can buffer up with. And Dana, it also kind of reminds me of the direction that you took your Adelise the Cinder Wind deck in as well.
Very similar, where you're kind of playing Voltron using instant and sorcery spells. So yeah, it plays very similar to my deck.
Yeah, and there's just kind of a cool, you know, waxing and waning, I think, here too, because you do have to be very careful about, constructing in your hand a series of cards that will be lethal, and especially that other people won't necessarily see coming. And I think that that's a really fun thing with Xu Yun that we don't always see with some of the other commanders. Like Muldrotha, for example, is a really big paragon of consistency. I'll always be able to get back these same things over and over again, and it's a very consistent amount of damage, you know, a very consistent game plan throughout the whole game. Xu Yun is very, you know, who knows whether the tide is in or out, but man, when it's in, it's going to be a whole lot, and then it might need to recharge for a little bit to find more of those cantrips, but it can be really fun when the tide actually does finally come in. I don't know why I'm attaching myself to this moon and the tides metaphor, but it works in my brain, and I hope it works in other people's too.
So moving on from random moon and or weather metaphors here, let's jump over and talk a little bit of botany and look at Najeela the Blade Blossom. Najeela is 2 and a red for a human warrior, and she says, whenever a warrior attacks, you may have its controller create a 1-1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. You can also then spend Wooburg and untap all attacking creatures. They gain trample, lifelink, and haste until end of turn, and after this phase, there is an additional combat phase, and you can activate this ability only during combat. So Najeela here has 44 cards with CMC 2 or less, a lot of which are cheap warriors that she's just trying to get out to hit enough numbers to basically get infinite attack swings. And signature cards are things like Mindblade Renderer, Bramblewood Paragon, Rushblade Commander, really efficient warrior spells that get to that number. So you can cast the Wooburg and just start looping those attack steps over and over.
Yeah, an average CMC here among her deck of 2.14. So we are inching ever downward, which is just like absolutely crazy. I think it's kind of important that there are actually a pretty decent number of 3-drops and 4-drops on Najeela's page. Like if you just scroll through her EDH rec page, you might not register immediately that she would be this low because it's not full of a bunch of, you know, 1-drop mana dorks like we saw with Kinnan, for example. The thing is, though, Najeela plays almost nothing that costs 5 mana or more. Like we just don't see that type of mana cost on her page at all. So there's no high end that's pulling her numbers in any direction. It is really just consolidated down in the lower bracket as much as it can be. Even the non-competitive Najeela decks really have no reason to play big creatures when they could instead just pump a bunch of mana into her ability to get more combats.
Well, and you said the magic words competitive there. That does make a difference in this deck too. Not that there aren't competitive versions of the other commanders we talked about, but Najeela really is very much recognized as a competitive CEDH level commander, which means there's a lot more of those 0-drop Mox Diamond level artifacts in here that just drag that number down even further that maybe you don't get with some other commanders that also want to do efficient things. They're just not running that efficiency in every other slot like you kind of see with Najeela when it's built just to play at that absolute peak level of efficiency.
Well, Dana, you know, speaking of commanders that attack, if we move on now to our number 4, we actually find a commander that I know you yourself are pretty familiar with. We're seeing Edric, Spymaster of Trest, which I definitely knew was going to show up in this one because this guy is 1-drop central. This is the 3-mana Simic commander. It is a 2/2 elf rogue that says whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller may draw a card. I think this was initially intended to be a political commander, potentially. Dana, in your experience, has politics with Edgar's draw card offer, has that ever been a thing?
That actually has never, ever been a thing as far as I know. I built this relatively early in the release cycle, too, when it came out. It was not nearly as potent as it is today, I guess. Yes, people were kind of figuring out how to play Commander quickly and efficiently. But immediately upon playing it, you know, 6 years ago, even, everyone very quickly realized this is not at all a political card. This is just a card for me to draw a bunch of cards and you right. to maybe make bad decisions at best.
Right. This deck is just full of a bunch of small one drop, usually evasive, unblockable, or flying creatures to just draw you a bazillion cards with just a bunch of stinking one drops. So the average CMC that we're seeing in an Edric deck is 2.1. Moving on down there. Fun thing here, there are 51 cards with a converted mana cost of 2 or less that show up in the average Edric deck, but there are actually 0 cards that show up in the deck with a CMC of 0, which is unlike some of the commanders that we saw earlier, such as Joyer, for example, who does enjoy, you know, playing a bunch of cards like the spell books or whatever, these zero cost artifacts that she can just play for free. Edric doesn't have any free stuff. He doesn't play any 0 drops. He just plays a whole bunch of 1 drops. Like, so many
like
one drops.
A lot of them.
So many stinking yeah. one drops. And then I think it's fun to note, too, the kind of payoff cards that we're seeing for Edric. Matt, do you want to take us through some of those?
Well, the payoff cards, I'm on board with these. Beastmaster Ascension.
Thought check. You might be.
Sign me up. Biomass Mutation. That's a pretty big heavy hitter. Throne of the God Pharaoh. One of my personal favorites in my Miri deck. I love it. So just all these things, you're flooding the battlefield with all these ones and twos, turning them sideways and just finding a way to make those ones and twos hit harder than your typical one mana creature would. I am all about it. Since you happen to be drawing cards too, I mean, it's just this deck has a lot going on. I don't know why people ever would have anything bad to say about Edric.
And I did check my deck. Average CMC in my Edric deck is 1.74.
How? What are so. You? How? Oh, wow.
Soul Ring is too expensive for Dana.
I don't think I have a Soul Ring in the deck. I do think there is not one in there.
Fair.
Wow, absolute insanity. But I just think it's kind of interesting, though, that like even those payoff cards are also very low cost, too. You're not seeing Greater Hoof Behemoths. Edric doesn't have time for that. He's like 8 mana. He scoffs at 8 mm-hmm. mana. He's like the anti-Matt, you know, that kind of thing. But like Beastmaster Ascension gives a big pump at just 3 mana. Throne of the God Pharaoh can just cost like 2 or 3 mana and then can still make your opponents lose a bunch of life. So you can still find a bunch of payoffs even at those low mana costs, which I just think is probably a good lesson for people to sort of keep in mind in general, that you don't always need the biggest and splashiest stuff sometimes to do what will be the most amount of damage. We are now to our top three, I'm seeing, but you know what? Before we get to our top three, the lowest of the low mana curves in Commander, I think we ought to pause, and I think we ought to challenge some stats. It's one of our favorite segments here on the show. There's a whole bunch of data on EDH Rec, but we just don't always agree with it. Sometimes we think the cards see too much play. Sometimes we think the cards see too little play. So what we'd like to do is challenge all those stats here. Matt, do you mind starting us off this week? What's your challenge?
So my challenge this week is for a Luna Apex of Wishes deck. So that is the beast, elemental, dinosaur, avatar, something or other. There's like 18 creature techs to every creature in a Koria Lair of Behemoths. But a Luna is the teamer colored legend that it basically has the mutate ability of whenever this creature mutates, you exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land permanent card. You put that card onto the battlefield or into your hand. So Soothsaying is a card that is only showing up in 7% of decks currently that is, I think, should be played a little bit more. Soothsaying is just such an effective card for finding ways to set up the top of your deck. I know, Joey, you have a Yennet deck, which you have some sort of effects to make sure the top of your library is set up so that when you get this trigger that you're looking for, you're going to hit some high-value targets. You're not going to be hitting the 1 and 2 mana creatures, whatever you're, you know, hopefully not hitting. So the deck typically should be playing some amount of top deck manipulation. Soothsaying is only, like I said, only played in 7%. Crystal Ball is a quarter, and that is only being played in 0%. It's not even on Aluna's page currently. Sensei's Divining Top, if your playgroup doesn't hate you for it, is being played in 14% of decks in Aluna right now, which is fine, but just having some sort of way to manipulate the top of your deck so that you're not hitting all these 1 and 2 mana dorks, anything like that. You're hitting the Sandworm Convergences. You're hitting exciting cards off of Aluna's mutate ability, not the cheap little so-sos. So I think anything that's going to help you manipulate the top of your deck, Crystal Ball is one of my favorites, just for a quarter, not showing up on a Luna's page at all. That could probably get ticked up a little bit. As with Soothsaying, I know you do have some risk, as these are non-land permanents that you can flip with a Luna's ability, but that risk is worth it if you're going to be able to set up to have bigger payoffs down the road.
I can certainly fully support the ideas of manipulating the top of your deck, because as I've seen with Yunette, it is bonkers amount of fun. And when cheating stuff into play, there's just no better feeling. There just isn't. Also, Matt, I love that you've, in our episode about low mana curves, you found a way to talk about cheating really expensive stuff into play.
I had to find some way to just turn it around on itself.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of cool options, so definitely look for them. I really like that. I'll move now to my challenge here, and this is from one of our listeners who goes by Zofka on our Discord. So Zofka, this one's for you. He recommends for a Sidisi Brood Tyrant deck the card Sakashima the Imposter. And if you've been playing any Among Us, you should definitely be aware of the Imposter. In fact, when we had Talia Vess on our stream, twitch.tv/EDHRetcast, she also played Sakashima the Imposter and proved to be the imposter that certainly killed us all. It was really phenomenal. But just one sec, let's get back to that challenge. Zofka wants us to know that Sidisi Brood Tyrant could really use Sakashima's ability really effectively, because Sakashima can become a clone of any card on the battlefield. It's a really fun card that, even beyond just the Sidisi pick, actually shows up in just about 3,500 decks. There is a bit of a price thing maybe going on there too, but it's a really cool clone if you're in the line for clones. If you're in the market for clones, I would say give this version of Sakashima a look, in addition to the new Sakashima that's just come out in Commander Legends. It's a really fun pick, so Zofka, thanks so much for submitting it.
Well, last to me here, we have my pick, and I'm going to set this up by talking about Triumph of the Hordes briefly. Triumph of the Hordes is in 31% of Edric Flymaster Atrest decks, Edric that we just talked about. So Triumph of the Hordes gives your creatures +1/+1 and infect. And what happens in an Edric deck is, because your stuff is all unblockable, your infect damage is going to get through and you're trying to kill everyone by casting Triumph. The problem there is your deck is filled with 1/1s, and if you are giving them all +1/+1, you need to hit each person basically with 5 creatures to infect them out, because odds are there's no other infect sources in that deck, or no one else has poison counters or anything else, which means that's 15 creatures you need to have out. The deck can do that, but that's a relatively big ask to kill everyone. Additionally, you can't really swap things around. Like the odds are everyone's at 0 infect, so you have to put the full amount towards everyone. A card that should be in more Edric decks in particular, I think, is Scale Up. It's a sorcery that was in Modern Horizons. It's 1 green mana, but you're going to overload it for 6. So for 4 green until the end of turn, target creature you control becomes a green worm with base power and toughness 6/4. And if you overload it, it's all creatures. You can't really like Overwhelming Stampede and Edric deck that doubles creatures' power because they go from 1 to 2. In this case, all those 1/1s that are unblockable become 6/4s, and it lets you much more easily get through for lethal damage than Triumph does, in my experience, because you have one person at, you know, 18 damage or 18 life because you've hit them a few times on previous turns. You can just send 3 creatures their way. Somebody else who's at 35, you can send 6 creatures their way. It just makes getting those kills much easier than Triumph most of the time. And it's in just 12% of decks. I think if you're playing Edric, Flying Man, or one of those variants, Scale Up is as good, if not better, than Triumph of the Hordes, and it's way underplayed compared to Triumph.
Matt, we've discovered the secret to why Dana's Edric deck has such a low mana curve. It's because he plays cards like Scale Up, which have a deceptive mana cost.
Very true. I was actually going to note that. We discussed that last week, but Scale Up is a good example of one that's not really a one drop.
It's not really a one drop, kind of like Cyclonic Rift isn't really a two drop. Either it's always way more.
All right, cool stuff, you guys. But let's get back to our main topic now. We're rounding it out to the final 3, the commanders that have the lowest average mana costs in their decks, the lowest of the mana curves here. We're going to head now to number 3, which is Zirda, the Dawnwaker. That is the Boros 3-mana 3/3 Elemental Fox from the Ikoria set. It has the companion stuff, but we're not talking about it as a companion. We're just talking about it as a commander. It has that ability. Abilities you activate that aren't mana abilities cost 2 generic mana less for you to activate, and that can't reduce them to cost less than 1 mana to activate. Plus, it can also pay 1 and tap itself to have target creature unable to be a blocker this turn, which I don't think comes up nearly as much, because Zirda can do some other stuff with that first ability, some infinite stuff like we've seen in most of the other commanders from this episode. Zirda's average CMC across its deck is 2.0 2. We're nearly there. We are almost there. And in terms of cards that have a converted mana cost of 2 or less that show up in Azir to deck, there's 41 of those. 41 of those cards that have a mana cost of 2 or less. That is really, really low. Although, interestingly, Zirda's average deck does not seem to contain any cards that have a CMC of 5 or higher. So it is very, very low to the ground indeed.
Yeah, that's super, super lean for a deck that isn't necessarily pointing you at something like Edric running a bunch of one drops or Joy running a bunch of super cheap artifacts. This it seems a little more nebulous about what is filling out all the slots in this kind of deck.
Yeah, and in this case, it's a couple of strange, almost eclectic cards, I would say. Soulbright Flamekin, for example, shows up on Zirda's page pretty popularly, which can pay mana to give something trample, but if you activate that ability enough times, it actually gives you a bunch of mana as well, which can then help you pay for a whole bunch of other things. You've got the Staff of Domination, which can be an absolutely crazy thing once you've got infinite mana, which, as we know, Zirda is totally able to do from, you know, the different monoliths that exists, because a monolith can tap for mana, Zirda can untap it for way cheaper than it should untap, and then tap it for mana again and just pay into a whole bunch of those. So then you've got a card like Staff of Domination that can use all the infinite mana that Zirda can create to some type of game-winning finish. It doesn't require a huge top end. It just needs you to have a walking ballista, which has a CMC of 0 because it's got a double X in its cost. But with infinite mana, that's a blaze for the entire table. So Zirda's up to some really crafty stuff that you maybe wouldn't expect from a Boros deck, but I think I'm happy to see all the same.
Well, since we're talking about companions here, Joey, we might as well go to number 2. Who is Luris of the Dream Den, the Scourge of Legacy and Vintage.
Indeed.
Luris has 3 mana, 1 and Orzhov-Orzhov hybrid. The companion clause here is each permanent card in your starting deck has a converted mana cost of 2 or less. That seems like it would suggest you play a bunch of low CMC cards. It has a lifelink, which seems almost irrelevant here, but the last clause is probably the most important. During each of your turns, you may cast one permanent spell with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard. So we're looking at a commander that has the ability to just recur anything with a low CMC. So we're looking at 56 cards with CMC 2 or less in this deck, and that's giving us an average CMC. We finally broke it of 1.91.
Whoa, we didn't just break it. We went a full digit. Like, wow, I thought we were going to be like, you know, 1.99 or something. But no, Luris is just like, nah, I'm going straight down.
Yeah. No, we're not messing around here. Signature cards are things like Kaya's Ghost Form, Animate Dead, a lot of Blood Artist kind of effects, basically a bunch of 1 and 2 drops. And since it's not really running like the finishers you see in other decks, it's just hyper-efficient, super cheap stuff. You don't even have the occasional Triumph of the Hordes making your average CMC look terrible with those awful 4 drops.
Triumph of the Hordes? You just want to keep talking about Triumph of the Hordes, don't you?
Yeah.
You just can't get past that Edric deck of yours. No, so, Dana, what you're telling me is that Luris lets me cast my Blood Artists from the graveyard over and over again. Is that right?
Yes, which is why you need to always pack Graveyard Hate.
No. Don't be silly. I'm just wondering if I build a new Orzhov deck now.
There we go.
While I'm pondering that, Matt, do you mind finishing it up with number 1? What is the commander that has the lowest mana curve, the lowest average CMC out of all the commanders in the game?
So this commander, if you look at the average deck, plays an average of 50 lands, which don't even throw off the average CMC. That is quite the feat in itself. But we have talked about this commander a couple times before on the podcast on previous episodes, and that commander is Sidisi Undead Vizier. So Sidisi is 3 black-black for a Zombie Naga with Death Touch, has Exploit, and that is when this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature, and when Sidisi enters the battlefield and exploits a creature, you may search your library for a card, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library, which means she is a tutor on a stick. So the average deck, we'll get to this real quick first. Average deck has a CMC of 1.7, which is extremely low, hyper efficient, so good. 37 cards with an average CMC or with a CMC of 2 or less, also an extremely high number. We are seeing signature cards ad nauseum. Well, that's kind of weird. But then when you think about the average CMC, you're not taking very much life off of the average ad nauseum resolution. But you also have the Sickening Dreams and Dark Sphere combo, which people seem to still be playing, which can throw off the numbers a little bit, make it look like the average deck is playing 50 lands. That deck is what? It's 95 lands with a couple something combo like pieces and Sidisi. It's a little silly.
It's a meme deck, essentially, basically.
It really is.
That's completely tweaking these numbers.
That is the best way to put it, yeah. It's a meme deck. You get somebody once, and then they just don't let you do that anymore. Yeah,
it is a really cool idea, though. Like, Sidisi immediately tutors for the ad nauseum to just draw you a bunch of cards. You'd lose life equal to the mana cost of the cards that you draw from the ad nauseum, but as we're seeing, that's not going to be basically any life at all. You find your Sickening Dreams, which lets you discard a bunch of cards from your hand, which you've just drawn with ad nauseum, to deal damage to everyone, and one of those sphere cards will help prevent some amount of damage to you so that you get everyone for lethal while not taking any yourself. It reminds me of, like, the joke of the 99 mountains and an Ashling, mono red Ashling or whatever, sort of a joke. And Sidisi is still keeping strong here. Even a regular non-strange combo build of Sidisi, those numbers are not able to take us away from the ad nauseum stuff that we're seeing. 37 cards at the CMC of two or less that you saw in the average deck there. I mean, you can just play a bunch of zero stuff, because why not? And Ornithopter's not going to deal you any damage when you get that ad nauseum. I just really hope that if you are trying out this meme deck, you don't get a counterspell headed your way on that ad nauseum. Or else your deck verifiably does nothing else.
Yeah, then you're stuck trying to beat down with a 4-6 with a Death Touch, and I don't think that's going to go too well.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, Sidisi also maybe feels like an exception that proves the rule or something, because it is kind of a meme-y deck. So, to that end, Matt, do you want to take us through some of the honorable mentions, some of the commanders that didn't show up in the top 10, but, you know, almost got there? Because there are a few that I was honestly surprised not to see in the top 10.
Well, we have a couple mono blue because they just like to keep everything nice, clean, and in low CMC. Emery, Lurker of the Lock, and then Urza, Lord High Artificer, the crazy Urza. Both of those are coming in right around 2.3 or so, 2.32 for Urza, and then 2.25 for Emery. Both of them just love their cheap and efficient artifact enablers, and they, you know, their average deck list is there to reflect that as well. SRAM is also another artificer that likes to have a lot of very cheap and efficient ways to draw a bunch of cards. It's a similar deck to kind of what Joyra was doing that we talked about. A lot of zero mana artifacts, a lot of ways to enable the draw card effect. And then Feather, Joey, I know that's a commander that you have drawn a lot of cards. You're probably playing a lot of, what is it, Disdainful Stroke, or not Disdainful Stroke, excuse me, Defiant Strike, that's the one that I was thinking of. Defiant Strike and all sorts of little one and two mana cantrips. Probably is what they're looking to do. 2.24 is the average mana cost of a Feather deck.
And you know what? I'm thinking of pulling a Dana and slimming it down even farther if I can.
I dare
you. No, Feather was one that I was definitely surprised not to see in the top 10, but she's like nearly there. She's like number 12 or 13. And then Urza as well. I was just like, Urza's got to be in the top 10, right? Like, he loves his smaller artifacts. He loves all the mana that he can get from those. But he like just missed out like at number 15 or 16 or so. So those commanders are still definitely in that range. They have a slim enough and a streamlined enough mana curve that you should probably still be just as afraid of them as you already were. Last episode, we looked through a couple of commanders that, you know, we sorted out their specific card slot CMC to try and see what, you know, the data kind of reflects on that. Not just the average CMC, but also when taking a look at, you know, the density of cards that show up in the one mana slot or the two mana slot. And we've got some fun results here when we take a look at the lowest ends of the curve too. Dana, do you mind taking us through a handful of those?
The commanders that contain the most zero drops, Sidisi, Undead Vizier, we're talking about 14 zero drops there. Urza, Lord High Artificer, sitting at 9, as is Joyra, Weatherlight Captain. And these are decks where there's almost no downside in the case of Sidisi to run those zero drops. And in Urza and Joyra's case, it's all upside. They become mana rocks, or in Joyra's case, they draw you free cards. So anything that's a zero drop artifact in those last two decks, you are pretty much going to run.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at commanders that contain the most one drops, Edric and Xu Yan here, we have two. We talked about Edric, why it loves those one-drop flying men, things with evasion that can sneak through and draw you cards. Xu Yan, similarly, looking at other things that you can buff up, and those spells like you see in the Feather deck that are really cheap and efficient and let you get those prowess triggers stacked as quickly and easily as possible.
Very, very fun. When we move it to the two drop slot to take a look at the commanders that run the highest density of two drops, a couple of strange ones come up. We do have Luris of the Dream Den showing up here. Loves the two drops, 32 drops in a Luris deck, but there are actually 32 two drops in a Sig River Cutthroat deck. So definitely keep your eyes on that one as well. But a fun one that I was kind of delighted to see, and also maybe a little bit irked to see, if I'm being honest, kind of a dual emotion when I saw it, Arcades the Strategist also plays a very large number of two drops. There are 29 two mana cards in the average Arcades deck, because Arcades is another commander that can just play the thing out and draw a card immediately, in this case if it's a defender. So you play a bunch of really cheap walls, honestly not even because they're walls that you want to attack with per Arcades' abilities, but really just to draw as many cards as you possibly can, because it's a really cheap thing that lets you draw a card because of Arcades, and you draw the cards, and it doesn't matter which wall it is, you just draw the cards. You draw the cards and the cards are drawn.
I'm a little unclear on the directions there. Do you draw the cards or the cards drawn?
Unsure of the exact sequence.
Yes.
those all make sense to a degree. The three drops, the commanders that contain the most three drops, though, things get way weirder there.
Yeah.
Looking at Corona, False God, running 29 three drops, and Joey's, one of his favorite decks, Kaneos in Tiro. 28 three drops there. And the reason for that is, I just have no idea. Is that just something has to have the most three drops and it's just those two cards?
So I do have a theory on this one. For Corona, I think that the answer is actually pretty simple. When you look at Corona's page, you see the impetuses, the impeti, the
impetodes.
Impetodes. You see the impetus. You see the impetodes, which are the ones that sort of goad an enemy creature. So when Corona is moving around the battlefield, swapping ownership as it loves to do, then the imps will prevent Corona from coming your way most of the time. And the same is also true for other cards like the Vow of Flight, Vow of Wildness. We've got different vows that show up there. So there are a couple of... there's a bunch of three mana auras that prevent Corona from heading your way. So that would explain why Corona's got such a high density of them, in addition to other cards probably like Cultivate that also help just get the ball rolling in the first place. Kaneos in Tiro is a little bit more ethereal, but I think I still have a theory. And the theory is Generous Gift. The theory is Chaos Warp. The theory is those really delightful three mana, very diverse removal spells that a group hug deck can really pull a lot of political favor with. So I think that might be what influences Kaneos and Tiro's numbers.
That makes more sense than anything I came up with. So I will bow to your experience with the decks and assume you're correct.
I always am, Dana.
I don't know about that.
No, you don't. No, you certainly don't. And you make sure that you prove it every time you find one of those eight drops to cheat into play. And it's really great.
That is true.
All right, so we've gone through a whole bunch of data here looking at the lowest of the low mana curves, and I just kind of want to finish up by maybe any final observations that you guys have about mana curves, or especially about low-cost strategies.
The one thing I would say here is you should know why you're making your mana curve really, really low in these decks. An Edric deck that has a low CMC does so for a reason. You're running a bunch of evasive flying creatures that you can get out quickly, so you can draw a bunch of cards to deal damage to people to draw down to an extra turn spell or something. Similarly, a Jora deck is running a bunch of low CMC artifacts so you can draw down to your combo. They're running really efficient, cheap things for a reason. I would say, on the other hand, if you are just trying to get your CMC as low as possible, just to do that, you run the risk of removing ways to actually close out and win games.
Yeah.
Avengers Endgame card does cost 7 mana, and that, I guess, doesn't feel fun sometimes, but it wins you games too. Like, you have to have some cards in your deck that win games, and it works out with some decks like Edric or like Joyra that you maybe don't need to have those big high CMC spells to close them out. You do in other decks. So I would just say, understand why you're making your CMC lean, and don't take out all the cards that might be a little bit higher that actually let you win.
Well, and it's kind of the same point that we made last week about just the high CMC cards. You know, understand why you're doing it. Like, does your commander enable and reward you for keeping a low CMC? Kind of like we talked about last week with commanders that reward you for cheating big things into play that have a higher CMC. So just understanding kind of the purpose of what you're doing and how you're executing it in any given deck, that's going to pay so many dividends over time. Just understanding just what any given card or why the average curve of your deck is so high or so low. So if you're running a very low CMC deck, like Dana, your Edric deck, you know why you're doing that. You're trying to get as many little guys on the battlefield as possible, and then you're turning them all sideways. So just swinging with people in general with that deck is what your end goal is there. So make sure whether your curve is extraordinarily high or low, understand why you're doing it.
I think, too, a fun piece of this is that sometimes CMC itself can become a tool that commanders abuse as much as anything. Like, a thing that I mentioned kind of irked me about Arcades earlier is that it didn't necessarily care about the walls. Like, the walls are going to be good no matter what walls they are. You're not actually, you know, using the specific ability of any of those cheap walls that Arcades is drawing cards off of. You really just care about the card draw. The same was true of Jorva Weatherlight Captain. You're not actually taking advantage of any of the zero drop artifacts that you're playing. The specific abilities of those cards barely even matter. She's just looking for zero drops to help her draw cards. They are just a means to an end. It kind of reminds me of how, like, Animar, for example, can use morph creatures, which, you know, cost generic mana to play. Animar can get more counters, reduce the cost of the creatures that you cast, and so those morphs can be zero mana to cast, and you can do those over and over if you, like, make some Cloudstone Curio bounce loop with them. But the specific morphs, you're not actually leaning into. You're not using their abilities at all. A commander that does use those abilities is Kadena, which actually uses the morph stuff. It's actually a dedicated morph deck, and not just morphs are an object. It's not really all that different from how, like, the way that some of these commanders use converted mana costs is kind of like how Angie Falconwrath uses the madness mechanic. It doesn't matter what the madness cards are. They're just looping through them. They're just using them as a means to an end. And sometimes the mana costs of cards in your deck can actually be a means to an end, which I just think is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting to see how that works. And you know, Edric is really very similar too. Like, it's using the small bodies to draw down to your answer. These are all kind of doing the same thing. These super low CMC decks, they're doing it in different ways. It's taking a different path, but the main point is to draw down as fast and as efficiently as possible to find those answers. The last point on top of this I would make in terms of understanding why you're making your deck lean, there are situations where you look at your deck and you're like, it's clumsier than I would like. On average, I'm spending more mana than I want. In those cases, I would say if you're looking to lower your CMC just for efficiency's sake, start by looking at what we've in the past called vegetable cards, you know, your removal spells, your ramp, like the things that make the deck function, that provide your nutrients, the vegetables of your deck. It's much easier to make things lean and lower a few of those mana rocks from 3 to 2, or a few of those ramp spells from, you know, 4 or 3 down to 2. Go with those really efficient removal spells like Swords to Plowshares or Reality Shift. Than it is to take out those big haymakers. You're just, at that point, you're looking at making your deck flow better than you are sacrificing very much. So I would say if that's the case and you're looking to make things just more efficient, those are the places you should look specifically.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind is kind of the antithesis to that is just because your curve is very, very low doesn't mean it's a good curve for your deck at the same time.
Right.
And sometimes you might be cutting too many of those things that you think aren't, you know, you're trying to justify them as being unnecessary when really they are. Sometimes if you have all enablers but no actual payoffs, and you every deck, and like you said, Dana, some of those, even if it's just a 4-mana spell, those are going to be some of those spells that are going to help you win those games. It may not be, you know, it doesn't have to be an Avengers Edgar. It doesn't have to be 7-mana, but having a Beastmaster Ascension in your Edric deck, having a Triumph of the Hordes or anything like that to just push everything over the edge. Or even if you're in a Lurrus deck, you know, Exsanguinate may be to convert a mana cost, but you're never casting it for 2. So just some of those spells that help you just push the game and the strategy over the edge, that's going to help you have a well-rounded loaded deck. So like I said, just because the deck has an average CMC of 1.5 doesn't mean it's the best curve. It might be the opposite because you're missing on some things that, you know, for the sake of getting your curve so low.
Yeah.
Well, I will throw a personal anecdotal bit of data in here. I usually keep track of the changes I make to my decks. In the last couple of years, on average, my CMCs have gone down until this year. At least looking at the changes I've made this year, I've made more changes that increase the CMC of my deck than I have ones that lower it. I do tinker more than the average person, but I think part of that is I found myself without enough ways to close out games in an interesting way, and I had to put a few more of those high CMC cards back in to give me the strength versus just running entirely on efficiency.
I really like that. And as we noted in this episode and the previous episode, we saw a trend over time that CMCs across all decks do seem to be going down, but they can't go down forever. Right. It takes a whole lot for them to move much farther past down where they're going to be. Like we saw this episode, the CMCs took forever to hit below 2 at long last. So it does plateau. We might even, I don't know, potentially we might actually be in the middle of that CMC plateau, since things moved from like 3.39 on average across all EDH decks to an average CMC of 3.33. Like, it's probably like things can get streamlined, but they can only get streamlined so much. Those big, awesome haymakers that, Matt, I know you love to play and stomp all over me with, those are always going to be a huge piece of EDH, and no amount of efficiency is ever going to take them away from you.
Absolutely. Well, and there's also just a case of diminishing returns at some given point too. Right. You know, you can only get under Farseek by doing spells that aren't actually going to get you ahead on mana. So like Attune with Aether, like that gets you a land in theory, but it only puts it in your hand. Whereas stuff like Farseek or Ramping Growth at least put it on the battlefield. So some of those advantages that you might make for the sake of having a lower curve, eventually they stop paying off.
Right. And that's just it. Like you'll always have your Crater Hoofs is what I'm trying to say. And we'll always have our Sakashima the Imposters
we'll always copy have your crater hoofs.
All right. With that, after all of this, looking over the past two episodes of all of these high mana curves and these low mana curves, I think what we ought to do is call this one to a close. Fellas, if our listeners would like to get in touch with us, where is it on the interwebs that they can find you all? Matt?
So you can find me on the Twitters at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55. And don't forget, Wednesday evenings, we are streaming paper games at twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. We have great guests every single week, so make sure you tune in to find out who we're having on any given week.
And Dana.
You can find me on the Twitter birds at Dana Roach. You can hear me once a week on my other podcast, CMDR Central. And you can find all of us at patreon.com/EDHRecCast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter. And you can find the cast at EDH RecCast on both Facebook and on Twitter as well. Plus, if you have a question, you can contact us at edhrecast@gmail.com. Our thanks again to Josh Lequai and the team at the Command Zone for handling the post-production work on our podcast. And our thanks to our sponsors for the show. That's TCG Player and CardKingdom.com. You can find them using the price info links on EDH Rec or by visiting CardKingdom.com/EDHREC to show your support for the show. We'll be back at you next week with more data and insights. But until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.